You're listening to The Barn Burner now on CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver, featuring the greasier side of rock and roll, rhythm and blues, and country. On Monday, January 31st at the Van City Theater, The Secret to a Happy Ending will be screening, and it's a documentary about the drive-by truckers, a band that gets a lot of show, a lot of spins on The Barn Burner, and it's directed by Bar Wiseman. And I am lucky enough today to have Bar on the line. Bar, are you there?
I'm here.
Right on, man. How are you doing?
I'm doing good, thank you. It's great to be here. Thanks
well,
for having me.
Hey, anytime. Well, you know, I was looking on online in terms of the amount of screenings that are going on across North America. You must be a fairly busy guy right now.
It's really exciting to have this happening. I never expected anything like this. I'm only getting to go to a few of the screenings. This isn't exactly my livelihood. This was a labor of love, so I'm making it when I can.
That's great. Yeah, well, that's right. I read that you started, you know, your career basically started off in film in editing, and you still do a lot of editing, don't you?
Yes, I do.
Now, if I understand the story behind your proposal to the band, you pretty much like ambushed them after a gig, didn't you?
Well, it came to that. I initially started much more civilized. I just I wrote an email to them,
right?
After I'd seen them a few times and explained that I was actually a filmmaker, that I'd never done a rock documentary before, and I don't know that I even consider this a rock documentary, even though they are the subject.
Right.
And I think they were sort of drawn to that, but I think, like a lot of things, we're all leading busy lives, and it just sort of drifted along. But I was pretty obsessed with the idea,
mm-hmm.
so I had to sort of keep following up, and it did sort of lead to me having to ambush them at a gig here in D.C. where I live.
Well, I do appreciate your moxie, sir.
Well, thank you.
no problem. You know, at the risk of preaching to the choir of my listenership, because we do spin a lot of drive-by truckers on this show, why the drive-by truckers? I mean, did you feel that there was a story there right off the bat?
Not right off the bat, no. The first time I saw them, I had no idea. I knew Southern Rock Opera, and so I was real eager to see them, and of course that night, although they played for 3 hours, they only did maybe two songs off of Southern Rock Opera.
Yeah, yeah.
So I didn't know what they were playing, but they sure seemed to mean it. And that, you know, really sort of stayed with me. I'm somewhat of an older generation of rock fans. I'm in my 50s now, and so I can say, you know, first 45 I ever bought was Satisfaction by the Rolling Stones. So I sort of go back a ways. And there was something about the energy that, you know, reminded me about when rock and roll, you know, made my world go from black and white to color.
Yeah.
And, you know, but then as I started really paying attention to the songs and finding out more about where they were from and everything, it was like, you know, this is a story. This isn't just great rock and roll. There's a lot going on here.
Well, and yeah, I mean, and you basically got a chance to observe a band through a lineup change and even like a divorce within the band. I mean, it must have kind of been a little bit hard to remain impartial as a filmmaker when you're in close proximity to all this stuff.
Absolutely, and that was certainly never the goal. Again, I think going back to, you know, what they felt would work out as a good relationship in terms of me as a filmmaker who wasn't wanting to make a behind-the-scenes kind of, you know, problems with record companies, problems with, you know, life on the road. I wanted it to be about their art and about their creativity. It was never thought that that's what would transpire over the course of the years of filming it. And it did make it difficult. I realized, well, on one level, this makes the film more valuable and more compelling. But as a fan, it was like, I really want you guys to work this out. I really want you to find a way to keep making the music that we all love so much.
That's right, yeah. I'd rather you stick together than this be one, like, whirlwind of a friction-filled documentary almost. It's a tightrope that you kind of have to walk, I suppose.
Yeah, absolutely. And there was a point where, you know, I did show Patterson Hood a short clip from the film, and he was saying, well, that's really good. You know, and I know you think you're done filming, but I think you might want to film a little more. You might want to film these next shows because they may be our last. And I'm thinking, what?
Man.
What are you saying? You know, and then, of course, after that, it was like, well, you can't end the movie now because now it's too depressing.
Right.
We have to carry on even further. So we're approaching the 7-year mark from when I first approached them.
7 years. That definitely is a labor of love.
And you
brought up an interesting point, and I mean something that I've always really admired about the drive-by truckers, and especially for they seem like the representatives for their region, and that they do mean it. I mean, there's obviously a lot of conviction there. You were also with the band during a change in administration for the U.S. government. I mean, was that something that came across tangibly during the making of this film?
Boy, that's a great question and very perceptive of you. I can't say that it does. I can certainly say that it was a major subtext just amongst us while we were filming it. I will say, and it's probably hard to discern this in the film now this many years out, but at the time when I started it and started falling in love with them in 2003, in the wake of September 11th, I really was looking for stories that kind of defied stereotype, because I felt that particularly in this country, people were getting very closed in and quick to demonize the other and things like that. And I felt that what the truckers were doing with their sort of simultaneous love of the South, but their ability to see the flaws, that I thought that they were doing a sort of bridge building. And I was looking for a story that would sort of help people to open their minds a little bit and build some bridges. And, then, of course, with the September 11th, the incredible coincidence of them having released Southern Rock Opera on the day after September 11th and having a song on it like Angels in Fuselage, which is about a plane crash and the sort of aftermath of that. Of course, they had no idea it was going to happen. That was not what the song was written about, but yet it really resonated.
Exactly. Well, I think also, too, with Southern Rock Opera, it definitely resonates in the Can-Am connection being that, one of the tracks is Ronnie and Neil. I mean, you're talking about two iconic North American superstars, obviously one has passed and the other one, both of them had an amazing amount of respect for one another. And there is that interesting story there because of the song, of Sweet Home Alabama. How about how they actually had a relationship and, people were making, a big deal out about two guys who really did get along and really respected each other's work,
So that's a very good point. Yeah.
Yeah. So
no, that's a really good illustration of that, we tend to gravitate towards the stereotype when the reality, is different and possibly even a lot sweeter than we might give credit for.
Well, exactly. So, I mean, and being a fan of, all three of those artists, you grow up as a kid and, you listen to bands like, Crazy Horse and listen to bands like Lynyrd Skynyrd and you start to hear stories that Ronnie Van Zant was like buried in a Neil Young t-shirt, that's the kind of reverence. But yeah, it's kind of what you mentioned about what everybody loves about drive-by truckers is that they'll tell you the history warts and all,
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. No, and it's, of course, their own relationship with Skynyrd and the music from where they're from. I mean, it's happening sort of once again in the way that they're kind of coming back to embrace Muscle Shoals now.
Yeah.
you know, which I think they were always proud of the heritage. And obviously Patterson, you know, really loves his father a lot and admires the music he did. But that was never the goal when he and Mike Cooley started playing music together.
It was to
rebel against that. And they went much more for a northern punk, you know, the Replacements
sort of thing. I think, as Patterson had said, you know, not the music that kids were listening to in his high school parking lot, basically, right?
Right. Right.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, and on that level, too, they like things being kind of out of tune and a little bit noisy and not perfect and kind of messy. And, of course, his dad being a session player, everything had to be perfectly in tune and you know, perfectly, you know, on the beat and everything. So, but now, I mean, if you listen to their most recent record and just sort of the way they've been going, of course, Shauna Tucker brings a lot of this to them because
definitely
he loves that sweet soul music. They're really embracing the Muscle Shoals sound a little bit.
Man. Yeah, completely. Well, you know, on a side note there too, Bar, generally when I open up the show, it's Booker T and DBT's version of Hey Ya.
So, all right.
Yeah, which is great. You know, it's like the perfect kind of instrumental track that you can kind of open with. Were you kind of in behind the curtains with the band during Go Go Boots? I know we're all highly anticipating this release that's happening in February.
No, I've been you know, gradually moving back into my role as just a fan,
mm-hmm.
which I love, because the years when I was filming, it was a hard thing because it's work.
Yeah.
it's really work, and it made it hard for me to be enjoying everything that was going on in front of me.
Yeah.
And of course, those ended up being difficult days for the band as well. So that was just coincidental. We're certainly still very in touch, and I go see the shows all the time, but I was not behind the scenes for Go Go Boots. And I know, you know, Patterson, and he's got a creative partner in Athens, Georgia, Jason, who they've been putting together some short films sort of behind the scenes on Go Go Boots that are very good.
Yeah, I've caught a couple of those online. To all those Barn Burnerites out there, you can check those out on drivebytruckers.com. Bar, are you, you know, and I know this was obviously a labor of love for you in terms of this film, were you happy behind the camera? I mean, is this stuff that you're going to continue doing?
You know, this one has really taken a lot out of me. I'm really proud of it. I'm proud of having it, you know, completed it and having an opportunity for people to see it, like I hope folks will in Vancouver. You know, I've got a wife and three kids. This one
didn't miss your face. Yeah,
the opposite of pay the bill so far. That said, I'm sure another project will find its way to me. Like I said, I don't know that I'll ever do another one about a band. I have done independent films in the past,
mm-hmm.
and it's always a struggle, but I guess it is kind of where my heart lays. But I do find they tend to be 5 to 7 years,
right,
in the making. And so I think the next one that I choose, and I certainly have thought about a few, I'll choose carefully.
Right.
And I just have a lot of love and blood and sweat and tears in this one that I haven't been able to let go of yet.
Right. Well, I tell you, Bar, very much looking forward to the screening in Vancouver on Monday. And all the best to you and your future endeavors. And, I hope things continue to go your way in the film industry. And all the best, Bell.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate your interest and your time.
Anytime. Okay, everybody, that was Bar Weissman, the director for The Secret to a Happy Ending, which we'll be screening on Monday, January 31st. So let's kick things off with some Drive-By Truckers today. This is the first Drive-By Trucker song I ever heard. This is from Decoration Day. The name of the song is My Sweet Annette. You are listening to The Barn Burner on CITR 101.9 FM.
Madness. was set to marry in October 33. I sat beside the coroner as fine as she could be. I never ever noticed her best friend Mary Lee. Took a job at the sawmill. I bought my girl a ring. Had a pre-wedding party, close to friends and family. Everything was fine, eating homemade ice cream. I swear I never noticed Maid of Honor Mary Lee. My sweet Annette was left standing at the altar. My sweet Annette was left standing at the altar.
Monday, January 31st, check out Drive-By Truckers, The Secret to a Happy Ending, playing at the Van City Theater. Drive-By Truckers have been kicking ass and taking names in the world of rock and country music for the better part of the last decade. Filmmaker Barr Weissman followed them during three critical years of touring and recording, years in which the band struggled to overcome the trauma of divorce and survived a near breakup. The film features interviews, behind-the-scenes footage on the road and in the studio, and captures some legendary live performances. One lucky attendee at the screening will win a copy of the film poster signed by the entire band. For more information, go online to vif.org/theater.
Stones. cars rattle, ace horse, they stomp and shake the boards, the rest they sing along, cheering for a firefight, praying for the end, praises of oblivion, go round a bend, not to be a downer here, but I have my doubts, see here a tide and the river turned about.
Baltimore band Arboretum with Destroying to Save from their album The Gathering. And before that, we got a chance to speak with Barr, the director from the new Drive-By Truckers movie, Barr Weissman. And it seems like it's Drive-By Trucker Day here on the Barn Burner, which is always a good time. I basically have their exclusive artist on the phone with me now, right now. Wes Fried, how are you doing?
Pretty good. How you doing?
I'm doing pretty good, man. You know, most of us in Canada know you from the Drive-By Truckers album covers, and now your poster is popping up frequently around Vancouver for DBT's documentary, The Secret to a Happy Ending. What most people don't know is that an unfortunate run-in with a cow prompted you to think of art as a little bit more of a career. Can you tell me a little about that?
Yeah, well, that was unfortunate. Like the first week of high school, too.
Really?
Working cattle on my dad's farm, and one was trying to go out a gate that wasn't she wasn't supposed to go out of, and I was trying to stop her, and our feet got tangled up, and I got the worst end of it. So I was laid up for quite a while thinking that maybe farming wasn't direct for me. Plus the hours. I really, really wasn't down with the hours much.
It's some pretty early rising, isn't it?
Yeah, early to rise and then working until you can't see anymore.
Yeah, it's I think it's tough all over North America. My dad grew up on a farm in Saskatchewan, so
yeah.
I know what that's all about.
Or yeah, I don't envy you those winters in that.
Yeah, exactly. At least you had a little bit of warmth down there, eh?
Well, the winter I broke my leg, it was 77, so it was like the year of the blizzards. There was like 4 feet of snow on the ground most of the time in the Shenandoah Valley.
Are you serious? That's some pretty extreme snow.
Yeah, it was definitely out of the ordinary.
You're
all around.
No, I mean, you know, to look at your work, you know, with the Shenandoah Valley, obviously there's a lot of influence there. Can you tell me a little bit about the landscape, you know, in the Shenandoah Valley in Virginia?
Well, I grew up like in sight of the Blue Ridge Mountains. It was, you know, that was a constant, just the whole mountain chain running the length of the valley. We were close enough you could see the lights on the cars up on the Skyline Drive at the top of the mountain. And they always looked like, when I was a little kid, I thought they were like dinosaurs when the dinosaurs went extinct, they had just gotten covered up with dirt.
Yeah.
And trees grew out of them. I was disappointed to find out that a T-Rex was only like a couple stories tall. I thought they were as big as a mountain. But, you know, it's the landscape's beautiful. It's farm country and rolling hills and the mountains in the background.
You know, to take a look at like a lot of the album covers and to some of the work that you can view, it's you've always had a very keen sense of twilight too and the dusk hours, and I always thought that kind of was probably informed from sunsets and whatnot where you grew up in Virginia.
Yeah, it was there's a incredible view of the western sky from our part of the valley. It's just this huge expanse of sky that gets brilliant around sundown.
Did you always kind of know that when you got into art that it was going to be landscapey, basically just kind of coming from the area that you grew up? And were you always kind of like sure what you were going to be drawing?
Well, I've been drawing like the ghostly and skeletal type figures ever since I started picking up a crayon. But as far as the I think leaving the valley was what was kind of the catalyst for drawing more of the rural landscapes, moving to the big city of Richmond, which
right.
Obviously not a very big city, but it was big to me.
Big enough, definitely.
And, you know, at the time when I left, I wanted to go to New York and do the punk rock thing, but getting to Richmond kind of made me miss, you know, the country roots and kind of sent me in the other direction.
Right, and you know, in terms of your art, I mean, you've always been involved in bands. True, wasn't that when as you were growing up?
Yeah, even the kid I played with down the street taught me how to play guitar. So he'd have, you know, his brother played bass, and he played lead guitar, and he needed someone to play rhythm guitar so he could sit around and jam for hours on end. And that's where I first picked up the guitar, and I started singing with that band. And been in a band pretty much ever since.
Right on.
A few exceptions.
Tell me a little bit about Willard's Garage. You know, you were mentioning the skeletal figures that you draw. How did the world of Willard's Garage kind of come about?
Well, some friends of mine back in the early 90s put out a kind of a underground paper, just a low budget thing, and they needed some comics for it, and they asked me to do a comic for it. And I sat around and thought about it for a while, and there's this place in New Hope, Virginia. This old, it was an old body shop or auto shop, but it was just a shed, really. But the school bus went past it every day, and there was a sign inside that said Willard's, and I always assumed it was called Willard's Garage, and I said something about that years later to my mom. She's like, there is no Willard's Garage in New Hope. And it turns out it was a sign for Willard's Batteries.
Okay.
But it was in there, and I just assumed that's what it was called, and so I called the comic strip that because it was about, a couple of moonshiners that worked on cars and hung out at the garage and in between runs, and I just kind of peopled it with characters that I thought that were interesting to me. Hexter the Blood Possum and Dixie Butcher the wrestling waitress, the very extremely dangerous wrestling waitress of Crow Holler.
It's, you know, I was mentioning a bar that the first album that I ever bought of the Drive-By Truckers was Decoration Day, and there's a great cartoon that you wrote on the outfits kind of inner cover of like kind of the older skeletal figure sitting outside his trailer, and then the lyrics were kind of transcribed over top of it, and you always get a sense with your work that these characters are definitely real. They come from a very real place or people that you've met.
Yeah. Well, I, like most artists and musicians, who you kind of either go one way. You go either into a restaurant or the trades, and I was always on a ladder from my other job. My day job was always painting houses or something like that.
Yeah.
Like Cooley.
Exactly.
Cooley was a house painter until they finally got big enough for him to quit.
Yeah. Did you, speaking of Mike and Patterson, did this come about from basically, were you friends beforehand, or did they read your comic and then decide that they really liked the artwork and they approached you, or how did that work?
Well, we met them through the band. Our band, Dirtball, my wife and I were sticking around to scout out bands for this thing we did in Richmond called the Capital City Barn Dance. We stayed an extra day at the Bubba Palooza. We played a Friday night. They played Saturday. We saw them and, you know, were, of course, blown away. She went back and talked to them. They came up and played Richmond. And, you know, back then, of course, there was no tour bus or hotel rooms, so they were, you know, they crashed on our floor. And they saw, that's where they saw the art.
Yeah.
And that was during the formative years of Southern rock opera. And, you know, they just said, wow, when we ever get this record out, we ought to get you to do the cover. And I said, sure.
It's kind of turned into a beautiful kinship there between the art, you know, the art that's on the record and the art that's on the actual sleeve. So are you, you know, it's, I imagine that you're probably going to be working with them in some faculty, you know, in some facility until they decide to hang it up. And with a band like the Drive-By Truckers, that would probably be never.
Yeah. I think we're pretty much in it for the long haul.
Good stuff. Well, I tell you what, if Dirtball ever wants to come up to Canada, Wes, you got my number.
All right.
And you can crash on my couch, man. All right, everybody, that's Wes Fried, artist. If you want to view his work, it's www.wesfried.com, where you can view and purchase, right, Wes?
Yeah. Actually, the better place to see it at this point is Facebook. There's a Facebook fan page that has a lot of galleries. It's just Facebook. WesFried.com.
Okay. Definitely. Well, all the best, man. And like I said, yeah, if you're ever up in the north of the 49th parallel, you make sure you look me up.
I sure will, man.
Okay. Thanks, man. All right, that was Wes Fried, artist in collaboration with the Drive-By Truckers. And on that note, here's another trucker song. This is Daddy Learned to Fly on CITR 101.9 FM.
Thank you.
Film Society for their weekly movie screenings in the Subs Norm Theater every Wednesday to Sunday.
This week's screenings are...
Wednesday the 2nd through Sunday the 6th, don't miss Amelie playing at 7 p.m. and Howl playing at 9:30 p.m.
Tickets are $2.50 for members and $5 for non-members. For more details and membership information, visit ubcfilmsociety.com. See you at the movies!
Wednesday, February 2nd at 5 p.m., drop by the Norm Theater for the UBC Film Society General Meeting. There is free pizza.
What you want and do? I tell me, pretty baby, what's wrong with you? Tell me, pretty baby, tell me what you're gonna do. Tell me, pretty baby, tell me what's wrong with you.
That was Tell Me Pretty Baby by Screamin' Joe Neal, the rock and roll deacon. Kind of akin to Escuerita and Little Richard, which Escuerita actually I'm going to be playing next. So a lot of those New Orleans screaming and wailers get featured on the Barn Burner, one of which is coming up right after I tell you about this contest. I am giving away more tickets to go see the Drive-By Trucker movie, Secret to a Happy Ending, which is on Monday, January 31st at Van City Theaters. The doors are at 8:30 p.m. So I am going to take the first caller. Who can tell me who the director's name is who I interviewed today? That's what I'm going to do. So first caller to tell me the director's name of my interview today can get those tickets. Let's get that contest rolling. And without further ado, Escuerita. The name of the track is Believe Me When I Say Rock and Roll is Here to Stay. You are listening to The Barn Burner on CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver. Thank you. after Social Distortion with Far Side of Nowhere from their album Hard Time Nursery Rhymes just came out. And before that, we had Believe Me When I Say Rock and Roll Is Here to Stay by Escuarita. Congratulations to Carrie Erickson, who has won a plus one and herself to the Drive-By Trucker Secret to a Happy Ending movie on Monday, January 31st. And she got the director right, Bar Wiseman, and she got the artist right, Wes Freed. So thanks for listening, Carrie. Good job. One more contest before my time here at the Barn Burner is finished for this week. First caller in to name that just last band that I just played, Social Distortion, I'll give you an easy hint, can win two tickets to the Barn Burner happening tomorrow night, January 29th, 2011. Featuring Shiloh Lindsay, Rodney DeCrew, and Minto. Doors are at 8 o'clock. So first caller in will win tickets to that. That is my benefit concert for the radio station show, so it should be a hell of a good time. Sponsored by Lucy's Diner, and also by Happy Vet Video and the Lifetime Collective. So first caller in, we'll get those tickets. Let's keep things rocking and rolling with the Cannibals. The name of the album is A Bone to Pick, and the track is Mumbo Jumbo. That is the Cannibals from Hit Records in the UK circa 1980. You are listening to the Barn Burner on CITR 101.9.
can see the shape you're in. Finger on your eyebrow and left hand on your hip, thinking that you're such a lady killer. Think you're so slick. Well, all right. Brother Johnny, he caught a plane and he got on it. Now he's a razor in the wind, and he's got a pistol in his pocket. They say the man is crazy on the coast. Lord, there ain't no doubt about it. Well, all right. What are we gonna do? And she said, take two candles and then you burn them out. Make a paper boat, light it and send it out.
Con mi carro, Rosita. Usted sabe que te quiero, pero usted me quita todo. Ya me robaste mi televisión y mi radio. Ahora quiero llevar mi carro. No me haga así, Rosita. Ven aquí. Hey, usted que es al lado, Rosita. Oh.